We're presenting the Rudy Valley story tonight here on the Golden Age of Radio. And we're talking about the SEAL Test Tower.
And could you tell us a little bit how the show was put together, the rehearsals, the number of people in the cast, the budget?
The budget was probably not more than $2,500. That is, for talent other than my band and myself. My band and I received $2,500. And we didn't, of course, in the first few days, first 2 years, it was just, I say, a very simple show with just one guest, who could be Janet McDonald, who'd sing a song between 0 and 15 minutes and come in again the next 15 minute segment and not the next 15, come in the last 15 with 3 songs for this entire show. The rest of my band and myself in the commercials. But in 1932, with the advent of the variety show, there came a problem of being able to put the show in the time, let's say in the afternoon, so that we could have it ready for 8 o'clock. We generally began rehearsals around 12 or 1 o'clock in the afternoon. I can see ways of shortening the rehearsal period, but such things as the Yacht Club Boys, these were 4 boys. The Yacht Club Boys were very popular nightclubs and theaters. 4 young men that had these very difficult and special arrangements of the songs they sang, changes in tempo, key, with interpolations of other songs in each song itself. What I did was to ask them in another city, they'd be playing in Chicago or somewhere else, to make an acetate recording with a piano of their 8 best numbers, the things they'd like to do, the 8 songs. I would listen to that for maybe, say, 2 or 3 weeks when I'm shaving, dressing around the house, until I knew better than they did every change, every nuance, every change of key, every change of movement of tempo, and knew exactly what they were going to do. And I would also play them for Gordon Thompson, and he and I would decide in advance which of the songs we would use. And I generally did that wherever we could do that type of thing to save all that grief of rehearsing. So I introduced, from 1932 on to 1939, I introduced 5 or 6 outstanding songs a week. Not all show tunes, although Cole Porter, 1938 and 39, asked me to come, it was 1936 it was, asked me to come up with a wall of a story at Towers where he had a suite. He was a very wealthy man, of course, long before he did music, before he graduated from Yale. His family was in the Midwest, and farmer Shimmy had millions, and after his accident, he was unable to get around except in a wheelchair. And I went to the Waldorf Astoria Towers on a Sunday afternoon. He played the entire score at the piano, played the score and sang the score to me with Jubilee, the show from which came just one of those things, and Begin the Beguine. Played the entire score of about 12 songs, and then made an acetate recording of all them for me to take to my lodge in Maine where I could play them up there. I was up there on my 5-day vacation between the Thursdays, which I did during the summer months, and I made my choice of numbers I wanted to use and introduced 5 songs from Jubilee that particular week. And that, of course, to save me the time and effort, but we were so important at that time that Irving Berlin sent for me in 1932, when I was married to Faye Webb, a marriage that I knew was on the rocks. And that was the evening that she was going to go to Reno, and she was down at my attorney's office. And Berlin's manager, Max Winslow, had called me that afternoon, it was Thursday, and said, Irving feels he's washed up, he's washed out, he hasn't had a hit in 2 years, and here's a song he'd like you to hear. So I went over to the office of the Irving Berlin office and listened, it was several days before the broadcast, come to think of it, and listened to this lovely thing he played. Was, say it isn't so, say it isn't so. Everyone knows that you don't love me, say it. And this is exactly what was in my heart at this time with my wife, Faye Webb, who I knew didn't really actually love me. And the Thursday night we broadcast it, the following Thursday night, and she was on my attorney's office and they had the radio on, and even she said it too. So it's a song that fit the situation. She didn't go to Reno.
This day and age we're living in is cause for apprehension. With speed and new inventions and things like third dimension, yet we get a trifle weary with Mr. Einstein's theory. So we must get down to earth at times. Relax, relieve the tension. No matter what the progress or what may yet be proved, the simple facts of life are such they cannot be removed. You must remember this. A kiss is still a kiss. A sigh is just a sigh. The fundamental things apply as time goes by. And when two lovers woo, still say I love you. I'm glad you can rely. No matter what the future brings as time goes by. Moonlight and love songs never out of date. Hearts full of passion, jealousy and hate. Woman needs man, and man must have his mate. That no one can deny. It's still the same old story, a fight for love and glory, a case of do or die. The world will always welcome lovers as time goes by. Still the same old story, a fight for love and glory, a case of do or die. The world will always welcome lovers as time goes by.
We'll be back with more of the Rudy Valley Story right after this word from Lou Palmer.
Wouldn't you like to live every day with natural woodlands and open spaces all around you and breathe really clean air for a change? Visit Heritage Woods, the new adult condominium community in Avon, Farmington. You'll see right away that the builders of Heritage Woods respect nature. Here's an example. If anyone inadvertently buries the base of a particularly handsome tree, the fellow's made to uncover it with a hand shovel to protect the tree. And at Heritage Woods, you don't see any telephone poles or wires or TV antennas stuck on rooftops. All utility lines are underground for safety and continuity of service. Now, what you do see is luxury architecture and landscaping that blend right in with nature, unspoiled nature. There's a feeling of spaciousness at Heritage Woods, yet each cluster of homes is a miniature private neighborhood, intimate and cozy, with flowers and greenery everywhere. Visit Heritage Woods and see real living close to nature. It's open daily from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Take Route 4 in Farmington to Route 167 Avon Road.
Just a reminder that you're listening to the Golden Age of Radio from WTIC in Hartford. Tonight, we're presenting the Rudy Valley Story.
How many people were actually in the cast then of the entire, musicians, actors?
I had started off with the original seven boys myself. By about 1932, I was using 13 boys and paying all the 13 out of my pocket. And in 1933, I think it was, John Reaver had dinner at my home one night, and I said, John, I think I should deserve more money. He said, what do you want? I said, $4,000, and I got it. I could have asked for long before that. And it remained $4,000 until the end of the show. I mean, Fox and Gordon Thompson died in 1934. He came out the coast to do a broadcast and died of a heart attack during lunch. And Faulkner was our one man that would pull out a marvelous sketch by Jean Cocteau for Judith Anderson to do with this woman who has been living with this man as a mistress for years. And on the morrow, he is to be married. And she loves him, of course, very dearly. And she's in her dressing room at her home where he had been with her so many nights. And so when she calls him on the phone, and the phone connection is broken every now and then. She dies every time that she loses the connection. It's called a lifeline. And in the end, near the end, it's about a 10-minute sketch. Brilliant thing that she did so beautifully. She alone is the only voice you hear. You never hear his voice, of course. But the way she says, remember when you wore those pajamas or this, you did this and you did that. And then she loses them, she goes crazy, and she portrays these things with that fabulous voice. Then finally, near the end, he says, incidentally, she says, oh, the gun? No, I don't have it any longer. No, I don't. And finally, he says, I have to hang up. And she says, you have to hang up. And she doesn't want to lose him, but finally she hangs up. And the next thing is the gunshot. Those are the things that Faulkner pulled out of nowhere. Gordon Thompson directed. But Faulkner was a genius. He wrote many of my little introductions after the first 2 years and saved me the grief of having to invent them myself.
Now, during the SEAL test series, you very often allowed yourself to be the butt of the joke, did you not?
I'm turning down, or may turn down, a Lucy script that they just sent me from the coast that I'm supposed to do over Labor Day weekend when I get home, because it's the same thing the way we hear. It opens with me as a waitress serving Lucy at a table, and she says, you, Rudy Valley, the idol. I said, I don't want to be an idol, idol. I hope they come up with something fresh and original. And on top of this, they got me on every page for $2,500, which I don't feel is enough. So I'm going to tell them, gentlemen, first place, I don't want to do this type of thing anymore. I thought you'd come up with something fresh, original, different, getting away from the towel machines and the soap machines and the Coca-Cola machines and my thriftiness and my cheapness and the wavy hair and the nasality and all this business. So
curly-headed vagabond eye, dear.
Why, Martha. Martha Ray, you?
Yeah, what's wrong?
I was expecting a blue blood.
Well, what do you want, a stinger or a transfusion?
Forget it, Martha. I like you just as you are, and it's nice seeing you again. After all, we've had some wonderful times together.
Oh, we sure have, Rudy. Gee, I'll never forget the night you took me out in high style. We went to Cyril's. You were so grand. Remember?
Yes, and when the waiter came to our table, I said, Martha, what kind of champagne do you want? I remember you said, Mum's 28.
Yes, and do you remember how I got Coca-Cola 44? Ah, but gosh, it was nice. And on the way down, you drove so slow. Ah, remember how you stopped the car so often?
Yes. I certainly delivered a lot of bottles of green shampoo that night.
You know, Rudy, it's really too bad that you never went for me.
Well, we just weren't meant for each other, Martha. You like the gay life, but I like the simple life. For instance, before I go to bed, every night for 10 years now, I've been reading a page of Shakespeare.
Boy, it sure takes you a long time to read one page. But I mean it, Rudy. It would have been so nice. I can picture you coming home every night, and I putting out your pipe and slippers. You know, we really have a lot in common.
We have?
Yes. We smoke the same pipe. We wear the same size slippers.
I haven't seen you since you got back from overseas. How was it?
Oh, wonderful, Rudy. It was the experience of a lifetime. England. I love England. I drove all over the glorious English countryside.
But didn't you find it hard getting used to driving on the wrong side of the street?
Of course not. I learned how to drive in California. The one thing I'll never forget was that trip by boat across the channel in stormy weather.
I'll bet you got seasick.
Did I get seasick? Rudy, for a whole day I sat in a green deck chair and nobody knew I was there.
And I suppose you received quite a reception over there from the soldiers.
Oh, I'll say. And one French officer was particularly sweet.
Really?
Yes. When he greeted me, he kissed me on one cheek. Then he kissed me on the other cheek. So I... Well, I called and said, Monsieur, why don't you kiss me on the mouth?
What did he say?
He said, I'm sorry, madam, but I've only got a 3-day pass.
One line I remember. Does this ring a bell with you at all? A telegraph delivery boy arrives at the door to your hotel, gives you a telegram, and you hand him a tip, and he says, my, a shiny new dime. And he walks out the door, and you said, little does he know that that's a new white penny. That date was shown in 1943. Do you remember?
No, I don't recall it, but I wouldn't doubt that. That would be either Burroughs, or it would be Paul Henning, or it would be Tom Arms, Frank, or just Oppenheimer, Frank Galen, or Chuck Isaacs. They knew how to write. One model. I think one of the funniest, the best of the SEAL team shows, in my opinion, was in the fall of 40 when we had the presidential election. And that 30 minutes was the Vagabond Lover versus the Great Profile. I got all of these essays, and I'm trying to get something to put out two or three of these shows, especially this particular one that I like, where he says, I'm the Rudy, the Cutie, the Coonie, Patootie, the Vagabond Lover for me. He said, I met him all! The Primal! I'm John, the Great Profile! And because the ones with Orson Welles insulting the two Barrymores and Lionel on the joint, giving him a bad time. And as Orson says, yes, Barrymore played Peter Pan, the Pan with Peter and Yelp, and so on. All they think. All this sketches, those lines are so great for those shows, because we had writers that you couldn't get today for $5,000 or $10,000 for a half hour job.
There is something solid and true about things that have survived the years. Music, drama, art, as personified by tonight's presentation, are manifestations of this. Another is a tried and true institution such as the Burritt Mutual Savings Bank, which since 1889 has existed through good times and bad, war and peace, yet continues to grow and prosper with the years. Safety, service, and growth have been the hallmarks of Burritt's progress, all built on the premise of good customer service. You can save at Burritt with confidence, with pride. Why not start your account today? Offices at Corbin's Corner, West Hartford, 267 Main Street, New Britain, Slater Road, New Britain. Deposits insured to $20,000 by Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. Our guest tonight is Rudy Vallee. And Rudy, before we continue any further, we have a segment from the Seal Test Tower in which you introduced a comedian from Massachusetts. Let's see if you can remember.
Not so long ago, while playing an engagement in a small town in Massachusetts, I watched a young fellow named Billy DeWolf literally bring the house down with some of the most convulsing impressions and comedy numbers I had ever seen. Subsequently and inevitably, this young fellow came west, where between his part in the picture Dixie, he sandwiched in an enlistment in the Navy. Back again at Paramount, where he has appeared in Our Hearts Were Growing Up, he is now being enjoyed in the Technicolor musical Blue Sky. I think you will find him most interesting and enjoyable. It's a long way from Massachusetts to our microphone, but here he is, Billy DeWolf.
Thank you, Rudy, for that wonderful introduction. I'm very grateful for the opportunity to share your microphone with you.
You're perfectly welcome, Billy. You can talk as much as you want to into your hat.
That's very generous of you, Rudy.
Yes, I did.
You know, that's one of the things I like about radio. Everyone's so generous. I appeared as a guest on a soap program 2 weeks ago, mentioned the name of the product, and they promised me a case of soap every month for the next 10 years.
They did?
Yes. And then for the past 3 weeks, I've been on a milk program with Ginny Sims. I merely mentioned the name of it, and Ginny promised me a bottle of milk every day for the rest of my life.
She did?
Oh, yes. And now here I am on the Philip Morris program.
How nice.
Rudy, I mentioned Philip Morris.
Oh, pardon me. Here, have one.
Aren't you forgetting something, old boy?
Forgetting something? Oh, yes, of course. You need a match, too. Here you are.
Thank you. I'll return the match as soon as I'm through with it.
Billy, you are a native of Massachusetts, aren't you?
Why, yes, Rudy. I'm originally from Wollaston.
Wollaston, oh, yes. But at least we're both New Englanders. You know, it's going to be wonderful to be back there now with snow on the ground and everyone bobsledding and ice skating.
And skiing.
Yes. No, Billy, that's pronounced skiing. Oh, but wasn't it fun to be up in the mountains with a pair of skis in the wintertime?
It wasn't so bad in the summer, either.
It certainly wasn't. Well, now, Billy, let's get down to business. What would you like to do on the program tonight? Have you anything prepared?
Well, yes, Rudy. I'd like to do a vignette. It's a short radio adaptation of a play by Coward.
Noel Coward?
Sam Coward. He's always being mistaken for Noel Coward. It's been quite a help to him.
Well, what sort of play is it?
Ultra sophisticated. Oh, very British. It's written for three people. A beautiful girl, her handsome lover, and her stupid husband.
We could get Margaret Whiting to play the girl.
I could play the handsome lover.
And I could... Now, wait a minute. This calls for some discussion.
Well, what's the matter, Rudy?
I'm not going to be the stupid husband.
But, Rudy, you could play the dickens out of that part.
Ooh, you could make it live.
I'm sorry, Billy. I simply won't do it. Nothing will make me alter my decision or even change my mind.
But, Rudy, this is the star part.
Star part? Oh, well, let's get on with it. Oh, Margaret, my name.
Yes, Rudy?
Margaret, we're going to do a little playlist. This is Billy DeWolf.
Billy the Wolf? Well, what am I going to be? Little Red Riding Hood?
Here are your parts. Now, the scene opens in the home of Lord and Lady Crudley. Lady Cecilia Crudley is alone in her parlor waiting for her lover, Sir Cedric McGillar. Music, please.
Cedric!
Cecilia.
Darling!
Late?
No.
Alone?
Yes.
Good.
Drink?
Thanks.
Bourbon?
Fine.
Chaser?
Coke? Cigarette?
Thanks.
I love you.
Chatterbox.
Solid.
Forgiven. Kiss, please.
Regrets?
None. Who? Oh, husband?
Well?
Hi.
Where?
Closet.
Right.
Quick.
Kiss.
Later. Coming.
Cecilia!
Schmo!
Surprised?
Very.
Cheat.
Why?
Hat.
Mine.
Derby.
Fashionable.
Liar.
Fruit.
There's a man in that closet.
Wouldn't you know he'd pad his part?
Out. Who? You. Me. Yes.
Gun.
Revenge.
Why?
Honor. Don't. Must.
I'm going. Going.
Gone.
Well, that's the playlist, Rudy. What did you think of it?
Well, it's rather unusual. Why did she call me Schmo?
Tell me, Billy.
Why does the author, Sam Coward, write such short speeches?
He wrote it with one of those new fountain pens that writes underwater.
Right. Well, what does that to do with it?
Well, Sam could only hold his breath so long.
Rudy, something usually goes wrong with a show somewhere along the line. Somebody goes up on his lines, or a cue is missed. Or, is there anything that you remember about the show that is amusing or tragic?
We never had very many situations where somebody either left a page out or lost your place or had duplicate pages or something. I can't really recall many, if I really thought about it, they don't. Of course, some of the seal testers, the thing that Barrymore did was just fabulous.
We had looked quite a bit around the line.
No, he didn't, but there was one script where he gives an interview to little Leroy of the Gildersleeve series, who interviews him, and Barrymore gives him this long, wonderful, majestic interview of how Lyra and I went to Sunday school. And he says, what Sunday school? He says, Jones Sunday school. Like, see, Lyra says, we all of that in the books. And all this, all of it. And he goes into great detail. He comes to the paper. He says, well, Obama says, that accounts for my splendid personality and great ability and strength of God. And I drink a glass every day of milk. And he blew it up somehow. And the audience went into about a 35-second laugh. He says, seal test makers. I wonder if I slipped up on that one.
Yeah, that was Walter Tetley, I believe, that played that role. Yeah, he was.
So many of the people that you introduced on the air, Milton Berle, Eddie Cantor.
Eddie Cantor did his first Coast to Coast broadcast with us on Miami Beach. I was playing at the Olympia Theater in Florida, and we broadcast from the theater in Miami itself. A great many personalities, I say nearly everyone, in any part of the world, Carmen Miranda did about 15 or 20, maybe 30 shows with us when she came up from South America to go into it. And also in Johnson's show, at the Shore Theater, I think it was one of the theaters the show was on. She was very, very funny. We had wonderful sketches between Holtz, myself, and Miranda. She would say something, and Holtz would pretend to interpret it from Brazilian to English for me. He had these crazy... No. So I would say, "Will you tell Miss Miranda?" Then he would give the same gibberish again back to her, telling her what I had said in English. All the sketches were very, very funny. Those little, they were sketches. No writing, practically. Just gave her three or four lines, and maybe me three or four lines. But it was a very happy show, and a 10-year experience. It was. I'm still reaping the fruits of it. I get such a kick when I meet somebody who says you've been entertaining us for many years, and we loved your broadcast Thursday night.
We'll continue with the Rudy Valley story right after this message. At the end of a busy week, wouldn't it be great to really enjoy your home in a country community where living is free and easy, where you can enjoy fresh air, trees, and singing birds, a community where you can walk from your door to a lush fairway of a private 18-hole golf course? You can, you know, at Heritage Woods in Avon, Farmington. And the best part of it all is that you'll have the time to enjoy these things. You see, at Heritage Woods, a condominium community, all outside maintenance is taken care of, leaving you free to really enjoy living, whether it's playing golf, tennis, swimming, fishing, or boating. It's all there at Heritage Woods, so make a move to be free. Visit Heritage Woods, open daily from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. It's on Route 167, Avon Road, Farmington. Tomorrow is Hospitality Day at Heritage Woods. They'll serve coffee, tea, and pastries from 10 a.m. till noon. Stop in and hear Mr. Henry Fow discuss sewing and designing with the new 1971 fabrics. Mr. Fow operates the Fabrics Plus Shop at the Bazaar in Southbury.
Well, Rudy, a very good friend of mine, Dewey Keogh, when he was in the Coast Guard, he heard your Coast Guard band as he played at one of the bases, and he thought it was the greatest musical treat of his life. How did you feel about it personally, putting that band together?
Probably the greatest musical outfit I will ever direct or have ever directed, because I got men that I couldn't normally afford to purchase and buy and pay in my normal days. Some of the trumpet players would cost me $300 a week. And Robert Maxwell and Harp was $1,000 a week guy before he became part of our band. And my own pianist, Elliot Daniel, a Harvard boy, who was just great, he got two pianos. We did a 2-hour show with humor and medleys and specialties and bits and so forth. It was just a fantastic, fantastic outfit. When I gave that down to even Fantasy for Harp.
As a Coast Guard bandmaster, I frankly approached the idea suggesting the inclusion of a harp in a military band with some misgiving. Fortunately, our district Coast Guard officer not only loves beautiful music, but was progressive enough to see my viewpoint. Thus, we were able to feature in our many concerts and shows at Army, Navy, Air, Marine bases, and hospitals the work of a young graduate of the Juilliard School of Music, who played with Toscanini. His ability to go from the sublime to light whimsy in music made him the outstanding attraction by our Coast Guard band. For an all too brief example of his artistry, by special permission of the United States Navy, Robert Maxwell, musician first class, United States Coast Guard Band of the 11th Naval District. Thank you.
Great outfit, and I would never have. We started with only 18 pieces and built to 42.
We were, I used the term with you the other day. Radio as an art form is probably the shortest life form of show business that probably will ever exist, and I'd like to pursue that with you now. Rudy, what do you think your program brought to radio, first of all, and what do you think radio brought to a nation in a time of crisis, during the Depression and then during the Second World War?
Just as the phonograph record in a way killed off the sale of sheet music and pianos, because no longer did the daughter have to, after dinner, go into the living room and play a few tunes at the piano for the visiting guests, they could now turn the radio on and get, by dialing around the various places, get some music to entertain them for a while after dinner, or even during dinner. Just so did television kill off the theater. Well, radio started to hurt the theater quite badly by keeping people home. And I think it had started to kill the 4 and 5 a day, the Alvin Katz presentation house policy, we called it. And it unquestionably hurt the sale of phonograph records and pianos, because they didn't have the gorgeous LPs they have today with the lovely covers and all the great many tunes of 3 or 33 and 3rd and 45. As a means of entertainment for the poverty-stricken home, it was about the only thing they could turn to between the hours of 8 and 11 in the evening. If they couldn't afford to go to a motion picture theater or a nightclub. Of course, nightclub didn't boom during the war days, because the ship workers and all the servicemen had enough money to go to nightclubs. They wanted to get away from the goodness of the war. But radio in question was a great, great household magnet, from, I'd say, from about 1929, 1930. It really began to take great stride with the advent of the network, which began 28, 29, and it supplied a tremendous demand for household entertainment at no cost whatsoever, and of course we gave a lot of pleasure to a great many persons. Ours did, I know, because I've got a lot of the letters, and I know that presenting these great personalities with the best things from their own portfolio of entertainment and features and things to that they've been doing for years, and said that Bergen was very worried that he'd be killed off in 3 or 4 shows. He said, these are routines I've been doing 4 or 5 years. I mean, 15, 20 years. And he says, after they're gone, where do I go from there? And of course, like 15 years maybe, he's going stronger than ever. He didn't dream that there were writers who could write easily for him and just take the usual facets of his show and develop them each week.
Yeah. Well, of course, radio was, as you said, it was a magnet. And people used to listen to the radio together,
our families. Voting time, election time, any time of war news, you'd see big crowds outside. I remember I drove through Holyoke on a Saturday. We went to play Smith College, or maybe Holyoke itself, or some college dance. I think it was Smith. And we drove through Holyoke here in Massachusetts about 1 o'clock in the afternoon, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and there were great crowds outside the store there. And Lindbergh had just made his epic flight. No question about it. It gives a hell of a lot for the money.
Kathy, where are you going so fast?
To the bank, Richard. I've got to put this money away before I spend it.
Where do you bank, Kathy?
Where everybody banks, silly, at Berwick Mutual Savings Bank.
And what mutual savings bank?
Berwick Mutual Savings Bank. I use their convenient Corbin's Corner office in West Hartford, but they also have two offices in New Britain.
Well, why the bird, Kathy?
It's one bank where I can get 6% for 2-year certificates and 5.75% for 1-year certificates. My money really earns there.
How about their 90-day accounts, Kathy?
Well, they have them, Richard, at 5.25% compounded monthly.
Why do they have mutual in their name?
Because they're owned by their depositors, Richard, and the profits go to them in the form of dividends. Burritt is the only bank around here with mutual in their name.
Well, take care, Kathy. I've got to get back to work.
Where do you work, Richard?
At Burritt Mutual Savings Bank.
What do you do?
I take public opinion polls.
How wonderful, Richard. Would you ask me some questions sometime?
You know, it's interesting to realize that although you were on radio 25 years or more ago, people still remember you today, don't they?
The amazing thing of my career is I've been, I'd say since 1928, makes it roughly 42 years. The amazing thing is that in the last year, I have found a culmination of all of these 38 or 40-odd years of entertaining in a tremendous recognition, handshaking, desire to say hello, to come and shake my hand and ask for an autograph, which has never occurred to me up to the last year. As we came out of the picture show this afternoon, there was a fellow, and I go, "Hey, Rudy," and I'm going to the lobby. "Hey, Rudy," that business, walking down 7th Avenue when we came in June 2nd to go down to Washington to rehearse how to succeed, which I'm doing in Summer Stock. As we went down, as I walked down 7th Avenue, going down to the various parts of Times Square and so on, the number of persons who stop and turn around and look like it and say, "That's Rudy Valley," or who come up and ask me for an autograph and want to shake hands with me, I think I could put Lindsay out of business tomorrow without any trouble at all.
Speaking of Lindsay, Rudy, you recently indicated that you're interested in becoming a senator from California.
Yes, as a matter of fact, were you ever active in politics?
I was offered the governorship of Maine in 33 or 4 or 5. I was on the staff of Louis Brown, the governor of Maine, and he was a dear sweet, so he made me a lieutenant commander and a naval aide on the staff. And we went to rallies, and I received much more applause than he ever did in both the Portland Evening Express and the Press Herald came out and said Rudy Valley could be elected governor of Maine tomorrow without lifting a finger, but I didn't care to live in Augusta, Maine. I think the weather in the Northeast stinks to the high end.
So the White House in Palm Springs, something like that.
But I never thought of those things in those days. Had I had any brains, I would take the damn thing and immediately move to California and maybe give them a month to Augusta.
That's beautiful.
Rudy Valley, my thanks to you for sharing this microphone with us tonight here on the Golden Age of Radio. And our thanks, too, to Ed Corcoran, the man with 2,000 hours of old-time radio memories on tape, for making it all possible. Tonight, the Golden Age of Radio has been brought to you by Heritage Woods, the new adult condominium community in Avon, Farmington, where you can really enjoy living. And by Burritt Mutual Savings Bank, the only savings bank in New England with mutual in its name. Our special thanks tonight go to radio collectors Lloyd Nesbitt and Don Brush for material used. The recording engineer was Dave Kaplan. The program was edited by Bob Sherrago. Our producer was Brian Hartnett. And now a sample of our next Golden Age of Radio broadcast.
Autolite and its 98,000 dealers bring you Mr. Charles Lawton in tonight's presentation of Suspense.
An excerpt from the thriller Suspense. Next month, our special guest will be its producer, Mr. William Spear. This is Dick Bertel. Good night.
Camel Cigarettes presents Benny Goodman Swing School, the Tuesday evening rally of everybody everywhere who gets a lift from the new pulsating music of youth, Swing.